accession number 28358, reel 3.
Golly, I'm talking too much.
No, that's what you're supposed to do.
This is Jill McNair and it's reel 3. And now I'm going to get you into the QAs. But I think you had some experience before that, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I spent a year as a charge nurse at the Churchill Hospital, part of the Radcliffe. And then I decided I wanted to broaden my experience. And I was accepted by the Hospital for Tropical Diseases to do a 6-month course in London, which is part of University College Hospital. And this was a most interesting course in tropical diseases, and we had patients from all over the world, from Lasca semen to patients with tuberculosis to malarial patients, patients with unusual skin diseases. I remember one New Zealand patient from New Zealand who had fought during the war, and he either had had one leg amputated or two, but he'd become a very good skier. This really impressed me so much. I cannot remember what was wrong with him. Obviously, he recovered. But it was a small hospital. It was in Devonshire Street in London, and quite an exclusive area. We had Sir Neil Hamilton Fairley. He was a well-known expert or specialist in tropical diseases, and he was in charge of the hospital. And we had various doctors there. And the nurses' training, apart from the practical training on the wards where you did day and night duty, we went to the Wellcome Institute for lectures. And I think we had at least a dozen lectures there by eminent people. I'm afraid I can't remember who they were. One of the lectures was on snake bite, including a snake catcher with all the equipment. And all I can remember about this, because it's so long ago, is the fact that if you were being in a dire position of being swallowed by a huge snake, which I think was, I can't remember what it was called now, you waited till it had swallowed you up to waist high, and then you withdrew your knife and slit it down. That's all I can remember about the lectures on snake bite, but it was pretty horrible. We took our examinations at University College Hospital 6 months later and passed that. And
so you were really very well qualified at that stage, weren't
you? Well, I suppose so, yes, for my age, because I was only 22. No, yes, coming up, just 22 then. I made friends with Auriel McNair, who was doing her training too, and she and I wanted to do something different and have a break from nursing, and we offered our services to help rebuild a village. They were rebuilding a village that had been chewed up during the war in France, but they had enough nurses, so we couldn't do that. And in the end, I thought, well, I must go back to Savernake Hospital just for a few months, because they'd been so good to me and given me my break, and they knew they were short of nurses. So I went back there just for a few months to as a charge nurse or staff nurse. And whilst I was there, I applied to join the Queen Alexandra's Royal Army Nursing Corps.
Why did you apply to the QAs?
I think it was possibly because when I was at Savernake Hospital previously, I read a lot, and I bought a book which was called Scarlet and Grey, and it was the foreword from Queen Mary, who at that time was our Colonel-in-Chief, and these were copies of letters written and collected by the Matron-in-Chief of sisters during the Second World War, and collated, and it was published during the war, I think probably to help with to increase the interest in the QAs, as they're obviously being short of sisters, because a lot of them were been wounded or killed during the war. Yeah.
Was that the case?
I think it was. I can't think of the word. I'm sorry, Lynn. You know, it wasn't advertising. It was
recruitment.
I'm so sorry. Yes, recruitment. I'm sure it was written there. But it was most interesting book. I still have it somewhere, but I'm not sure where. And I read that. And also, I'd had an aunt who was a QA, and I don't know. It was there probably somewhere. So. I applied, and quite honestly, I don't know why, I forgot about it, and matron sent for me one morning. She said, "Your father's on the phone." I thought, "Oh God, what have I done?" And my father said, "I have a letter here for you, Jill. You've just been granted a commission in the army, in the QAs." I probably hadn't told him about it either. And he said, "I think you better give a month's notice and come home because you're due to start in November."
Oh, had you had an interview at that stage for the QAs?
Oh, I'm sorry, I've forgotten about the interview. No, I hadn't. Sorry. Oh. No, I applied. That's right. And then I'm so sorry, I forgot to mention that. And then I was sent to a railway pass and instructions to go to Tidworth Military Hospital for an interview. It was an overnight job. And I bought myself a suit in Marlborough and a suitable hat and gloves and shoes and bag, etc. And took myself off to Tidworth, which is right in the depth of the country, near the Salisbury Plain. And I had overnight accommodation there. And then the matron came in the next morning into my room and I had a hat with a rail, and I had the rail down, she pulled the rail up, and I had this interview board there with she was Colonel Monica Johnson, who was the Assistant Director of Army Nursing Services for Southern Command, and she was immaculately dressed in her khaki uniform with her staff officer's scarlet band around her cap, and lots of them. Pips, etc. And the matron and the deputy matron, it was a small board, and I was questioned there about various things. Then I had to have a medical examination, and then I went back to Savanac Hospital. As I said, I forgot about it for some reason, and then my father rang to say I had been accepted. And then I went home. I gave a month's notice. The hospital had 2 days leave and joined the QAs on the 22nd of November 1950.
So, joining the QAs, am I right in thinking you were now a dual role? You were a nurse and you were in the army?
Yes, very much so. I think there are about 20 of us joined on the same day, and we travelled to Liphook. And we were met probably by an army truck and transported to the depot and training establishment of the QARNC at Hindhead, which was an old wartime establishment, hutted, with a barrack square, lots of huts, admin huts, sleeping accommodation, etc., and one large mess. And there it was the training school for all ranks of the QAs, because the QAs had become a corps in 1949, become fully commissioned in the army, as army officers, and had started to train their own nurses as other ranks, girls, for the very first time. And this is only about, probably just over a year or 14 months afterwards, or a little longer, that I joined. When we arrived there, we were handed in our ration books and various bits of paper and things, and given our sleeping quarters. These were, I think, were divided into two large huts. We had a bed and a locker and pots of wardrobe each, so about 10 of us in a hut with a wood-burning stove that always went out in the middle. It was freezing cold. And we had a month's training there in military matters and actually mostly military matters, because professionally we were to all train nurses and we had to be orientated into the ways of the army. we were went in as fully commissioned full lieutenants because of our nursing experience, but then we had to learn how to become army officers as well as nursing assistants, because we always had a dual role in the army from that time.
What did that consist of, that army training? Did you have to drill?
Yes, apart from drilling, we had to get the 10 lectures, and we were given lots of handouts and bumps, and we had rules, and at the time King George was alive, we had King's regulations to learn, part of King's regulations, all the army rules, regulations. See, we had square bashing so that we could take command of a platoon. We had to learn, I cannot remember very much about this, about flying the flag. Literally the flag was flown at early in the morning and brought down at sunset. There was a ceremony we had to attend. We went to various lectures on many things, and one of the most difficult things was being taught how to salute, and then to know when to salute and to whom to salute, because it was very difficult and you could always put your foot in it. During that period of time, we were taken out on various visits, again for orientation. And one of the visits was to Sandhurst Military Academy, when at the time they didn't encourage women to, enter their establishment. But we were one of the first sets of women officers to be, I wouldn't call it entertained, to be shown around Sandhurst. And they actually did give us coffee in the army room.
Is that where you were lectured by General Slim?
No, this was later. General Slim of World War II fame was giving an important lecture to army officers of Southern Command. And so we were taken to this lecture in a truck again to Aldershot, which was some way over bumpy roads in the evening, in our khaki battle dress, which I'm sorry I haven't mentioned.
Yes, I'll ask you about that later.
Thank you. And we were taken to this vast hall in Aldershot, and I don't know, probably several hundred officers there to hear him. And we were, because we were women, we were seated fairly in the front, and this well-known general came to the dais to talk and speak and give his lecture, and he looked at us, he sort of swept over us with a glance, and then he said, "Gentlemen," and started his lecture. But that was how it was in those days. It was quite, we were killing ourselves. We thought it was really funny. I can't remember a word that he said, but it was sort of good. But it was a privilege actually to hear him, because he was well known, following the war and that.
Very rude.
That happened. Perhaps I should say all the time, we may have been lieutenants, but our senior officers called us by our surnames all the way through. All the way through. And
They would have been women.
Yes, I should have explained. At the Colonel Dyson was the commandant of the depot and training school, and she was a rather fierce lady. I'm sure she knew what she was doing. We were all terrified. And there were various majors who gave various lectures, because the training school, training establishment there, had various courses going in from the basic training which we were doing, because we wore white tabs on our battle dress for the period we were there, and then junior officers courses, senior officers courses, various courses, and courses for the other ranks under training as well. And we had he was probably belonged to the RMC, a sergeant major who drilled us on the back square, and God help you if your petticoat was showing under your skirt. And there were various RMC probably attached to it. And I should have mentioned at Hindhead, across it was situated right out in the woods in the middle of nowhere, but across the one road that was there was the Women's Royal Army Corps depot and training establishment. We did work with them occasionally, and they were commissioned at the same time as we were, to be fully commissioned in the army. And that they had a green uniform designed by, I think, by Norman Hartnell, who designed that. Yes.
How did you relate to the RAMC, the women, that, you know, regarding status, I wonder, the QAs? I suppose this brings us into your uniform, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, that's right. When we arrived at the depot, we were issued with khaki battle dress by the quartermaster. This is a sort of khaki serge, battle dress blouse, skirt. The skirt had to be pressed in a special way. It wasn't pleated, but you had to iron pleats into front and back. And these had to be absolutely pristine. And the only way to do it was with a huckaback towel, which was sodden and took hours. We wore khaki stockings, khaki shirts, and khaki ties. We were issued with black leather shoulder bags, and we had to wear black leather Beetle Scottish shoes. We had white riding Macintoshes to go with it. This was the everyday service uniform, really service dress for the for the army at that time. It's now completely changed. I mean, the male counterpart wore this, but then we, as nursing sisters, had our indoor uniform, and then we had our posh number one dress for special occasions. Whilst we were at the depot, we were given an allowance of £100 each, paid into our bank accounts, to cover our uniform costs, which barely did it, but it was very helpful to have it. Starting with the indoor uniform, we wore grey Morgenshall dresses, which were new, and they had about 6 or 8 brass buttons down the front. These buttons had to be polished daily to start with. Eventually, lacquered brass was brought in, and it was a great help to us, because otherwise you spent your time when you came off duty polishing your buttons. And we wore a special shade of nylon stockings, and then these black Beetle Scotches, as we call these black lace-up shoes, on our feet. Covering, we wore the scarlet tippets, which were designed by Queen Alexandra when the Corps was formed, the QAs were formed in 1902, made of hunting pink, very expensive. And at the back, there's a rosette, which I can show you later, which we all said that was put there so on night duty, if you leant back, you would never fall asleep to keep you awake. We wore epaulettes on top with brass pips. We had 2 brass pips each as lieutenants. The grey collar, as a junior officer, the grey collar came outside. As a senior officer, if I never got to that rank, you wore a better quality grey dress of a sort of fine wool, I think, and it had a slight dog collar effect at the top with a white, narrow, lacy dog collar as a major and above, but that was the juniors. The dress of the junior officer, and we wore the white QA veils, or army squares as they're called, and at the back there's a logo with the scarlet logo with the QA badge. We were given a silver medal each joining, and the ribbon are the colours, the QA colours, which are I think navy, white and red. The badge was a heavy solid silver badge with the QA emblem, which is the Danish cross of Queen Alexandra, and the Sub Crucia Candida, which was our motto, which is under the white cross. And these silver medals, which are very heavy, we wore all the time until the day you left the QAs, and unfortunately you had to hand the medal back. And one or two of my friends, I've discovered, didn't, but I was honest and I handed mine back after 10 and a half years, and with so much polishing it was nearly worn away. but they were very heavy, and we wore them all the time. And so that was it. Oh, and we had scarlet cuffs and brass buttons to finish off.
I must say, it's a lovely uniform. And this is the portrait, isn't it, that I've taken your picture against?
Yes.
So people will be able to see that, because you've described it so vividly. So Queen Alexandra, you know, were royals very closely associated with the QAMS?
They were. She founded them, the QAMS, in 1902, and she designed the uniform. She was followed by Queen Mary. That's right, isn't it? It would be, yes. Queen Mary. And Queen Mary was our colonel-in-chief when I joined the QAs. And we... she was quite an elderly lady then, and I don't think was so active in the Corps as it was. But later, after she died, which was when I was in Japan, she... her role was taken over by Princess Margaret, who remained colonel-in-chief until she died recently, and the role has been taken over by the Countess of Wessex recently. So there has always been, and there's quite a close link, because Princess Margaret particularly did attend many functions.
I expect you, I know this is jumping ahead,
yes,
but as we're talking of the royals, I expect you saw her, did you, on several occasions,
yes.
Princess Margaret?
Yes, I did. the first occasion was when I took part in 1954 of the commemoration service at Westminster Abbey, commemorating Florence Nightingale's landing at, or finding the hospital in Scutari in 1954, when a detachment of QA officers, first of all, we were sent back to Hindhead to have a intense course of square bashing, and then we assembled at the Princess, at the Florence Nightingale Memorial, which is just above the Duke of York steps, for a commemorative service there before we marched through London down to Westminster Abbey, where Princess Margaret, it was her first engagement, and she had just been made colonel-in-chief of the QAs, and she attended that service. But I did see her on other occasions. We had an annual, and it's still ongoing, cocktail party, which she attended in London, and that is still going strong. Most frequently at the Royal Hospital Chelsea, we use around. And once at one of these cocktail parties, somebody came up to me and said, "Are you one of the ladies in waiting?" which made me feel a lot better. I said, "No." and I had the privilege of attending her wedding as a guest. This was on the 6th of May 1960, which was very exciting. There were 12 QAs were invited, all ranks. Our matron in chief went, Brigadier Monica Johnson, and the previous Colonel Commandant, whose name I can't remember, I'm afraid. There were several officers. I was the only captain, the only tutor, and several other ranks. And the officers wore, which was supplied from the War Office, we were supplied with gold epaulettes, scarlet sashes. At the time, these cost £30 in 1960, and white gloves to wear. And we had seats in the Abbey quite close to where Winston Churchill was sitting. And Dame Monica was in the front row, I was behind her, and we had to curtsy as all the royal party went up and back. And Princess Margaret, you could see, arriving at the Abbey looking like a fairy tale princess. It was a wonderful occasion. And afterwards, several of us were invited to St. James's Palace to see her wedding presents.
Did you go to the reception afterwards?
No, we weren't invited. But our matron-in-chief, Brigadier Johnson, was invited with one other to the ball the night before at Buckingham Palace. So, the sort of pre-wedding ball.
So the wedding presents, I expect they were
Well, the palace seemed to be full of them. There seemed to be old four posters and things. I mean, we contributed and we gave her a silver sauce boat or something. I can't remember the QAs. But
Was she a committed leader of the QAs, would you say? Did she really take a genuine interest, would you say? Or was it just a post that she, she fulfilled?
I don't really know. I imagine it was mostly duty, but I don't know. I wouldn't really like to say, you know, it's off to bat. I've always felt very sorry for her, but she did. I mean, she used to visit various hospitals. I wasn't involved again with her apart from on those occasions. But the cocktail parties were very interesting because they had people like the Countess of Mountbatten and various people like that there as well. So,
you were at Aldershot then.
Yes.
For 4 weeks, is that right?
No, I was posted from I've had finished my basic training, and I'm sorry, I should have mentioned the number one dress.
Oh yes,
that really is important. Sorry about that.
Yes.
We had three uniforms: the battle dress, the indoor dress, and indoor uniform, and the number one dress worn on special occasions, designed by Norman Hartnell for the QAs in a grey. Very good quality cloth with a jacket with brass buttons in the front, epaulettes with I think with slight scarlet around them, and our pips on top, a grey skirt, special stockings, black shoes, a grey shirt, and a stiff collar and a tie, and you had to use a stud, and a hat designed by Scott's Bond Street, which looked rather like a German Gestapo hat, but it was grey, a felt with a black patent rim, black gloves, and black leather gloves, and which we wore always, and black leather bag, shoulder bag, and this was worn on special occasions and also for mess dinners before the mess evening dress came in several years later. Sitting at a mess dinner, you had to, or getting dressed beforehand, you had to get into a stiff collar and stud and tie. It wasn't the easiest thing to do.
End of Reel 3, Mrs. Jill McNair.